Sisters, come together now, come together now. It's time to help each other out, help each other out. It's time for transformation, time for healing. You've got the potential, you've got the power now. We can soar. Sisters overcoming and rising. Inspiration, interviews, and more. We can soar. A sisterhood for healing and empowerment. Join Dr. Stephanie and soar.
Hello. Hello, Felicia. Welcome to SOAR.
Hello, Dr. Stephanie. I'm so excited to be here.
I am excited too. I am really excited that we have the opportunity to talk about this topic. This is a topic that I hear about, talked about amongst my friend circles. I hear about it from my clients. I've experienced it myself. So I think it's a really relevant topic that a lot of people will be able to get a lot out of. So our topic is, you are not crazy and you're not a fraud, examining imposter syndrome for Black women. And I always like to introduce my guests and just tell them a little bit about your bio so that they know who is speaking to them. And as I mentioned, this is our wonderful guest, Felicia Robinson. And Felicia joined the Boys and Girls Club of America on February 17, 2023. Prior to that, she was the Chief People and Inclusion Officer at Bright Horizons, where she oversaw all HR functions and led diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts to help ensure a diverse workplace and maintain a culture of inclusion and belonging. Felicia has served as Vice President of Human Resources at Dollar Tree, and Vice President of Total Rewards at Belk. Prior to Belk, she led different departments and strategies focusing on total rewards and HR transformation at the Coca-Cola Company. She holds a Bachelor's of Arts in Mathematics from Agnes Scott College in Georgia. In 2019, she completed her certification in strategic HR leadership from Cornell University. Felicia has been married to her best friend, Frederick, for over 34 years. 34 years. Congratulations. And together they have three children. She enjoys yoga, Pilates, and reading. And she also loves to sing and write songs in her spare time. So I can't think of anybody more qualified to talk about this topic than you. You definitely have the corporate experience and background. You are somebody who's worked in diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I think that we are going to have a great conversation about this very important topic. Did I miss anything in your bio? Anything you want to comment on or explain or...
No, I think you captured it all very nicely. Thank you.
You are welcome. I always like to start off, I believe that our stories are powerful and that the more we can share our stories, the more we can help other people because you never know how your story is going to touch someone else. So I always like to start off with asking you to share your story. I think that's how we build community and that's how we build connections. So what is your story? What got you to where you are today, getting ready to talk about this topic of imposter syndrome?
Thank you, Dr. Stephanie. I too love storytelling. And I think as human beings, if we could pause long enough to just hear and listen to each other's stories, I think it could be transforming. In addition to being the chief HR officer at the Boys and Girls Club, which by the way, I'm a club kid, so this was a full circle moment for me to join that organization. But on a personal note, I wear a ton of hats, like so many of us. I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a sister, I'm an auntie, a cousin, a niece, sister-in-law, sister friend, godmother, mentor, boss lady, and first lady. And it's just amazing all the roles that we all have to carry. But I'm blessed beyond measure because I've married my best friend and my high school sweetheart who's been on this journey with me for over 40 years. Mm-hmm. And we were also blessed to birth and raise three wonderful human beings. And that has just given me so much joy. But if I could author a book about my corporate journey, I would actually call that book The First and Only. And I don't say that to be egotistical, but in almost every role that I've acquired in my 30-year plus career in human resources, I was either the first or the only African American to be in that role, or I was the first or the only African American woman to be in that role. So I feel like the stage was perfectly set for me to experience this important topic and share with those on the call tonight.
Absolutely. So you talk about being the first and only, and I'm sure you're going to talk about how that leads into imposter syndrome, which I definitely agree that it does. So as someone who has been in corporate America and has been the first and only, have you personally experienced imposter syndrome?
You know, honestly, it was interesting. I don't think I was aware that that's what I was experiencing in the moment that I was actually experiencing it. You see, Dr. Stephanie, I am extremely comfortable in my skin. In fact, that's some of the feedback I've gotten, is that I'm almost too authentic and comfortable in my skin. And so I'm so authentically me that I really didn't notice that I was suffering from imposter syndrome once I made it to the executive ranks. See, I'm comfortable being in the boardroom and in the church sanctuary. I've been the only one to look like me in the room and have done it seamlessly. But my mother instilled in me that I could do and be anything that I wanted to be. That was like stated and poured into me. So when I first experienced this and actually feeling like I didn't belong, that someone was going to find out that I had to work so hard to be perfect. And it actually started to impact my own sense of self, but also my confidence and my performance. And I questioned, like, what is happening here? I have never been uncomfortable being myself. But as you will see, as we talk about this topic, there are lots of outside forces that is not really me. It's all these other forces that are at work. And I want to unpack that as we talk through this topic. But when I finally named what it was, I was then empowered to do something about it.
Yeah, that's really powerful how you were very comfortable in your skin. But even you being comfortable in your skin, growing up knowing that you can do absolutely anything, you still had a moment in time where you were experiencing imposter syndrome and didn't really even know what it was. So with that being said, I wanted to talk about, what is imposter syndrome?
The imposter syndrome, I'm a big fan of turning negative language into affirming language. And so this whole notion of an imposter even just has a negative connotation to it. But what is it? It really is, in its simplest terms, is when you have doubt about your abilities, you discount your accomplishments and the things that have made you you, and you then fear sets in. And one of the things I've heard my husband define fear as, it is false evidence appearing real. Mm-hmm. So fear of failure is false evidence appearing real. So if you've ever had that imposter syndrome, and hopefully some of the audience can help us rename this, because what is it is doubt and fear and discounting yourself. Well, how does it impact us as Black women? For me personally, it impacted my emotional and physical well-being. As I said earlier, I noticed that my performance and how I was actually delivering the work that I was very capable of doing, I noticed that I started questioning that and overthinking and trying to be perfect in the work. It also affects our relationships and how we trust and support each other. And it reduces your self-confidence and your sense of self-worth. So that doubt, that discounting, and that fear is a powerful thing. And why does it exist? And this is where I'm like, well, I'm not the imposter. The imposter are all these systems in place that has induced trauma in marginalized groups and in women, and especially in Black women. So why does it exist? Because we have systemic racism, sexism, and all the other isms, and that induces trauma. Maybe not physical trauma, but absolutely emotional and psychological trauma. We also have exclusionary practices in the workplace. I was in a conference just this week, and the speaker said, hey, women, how many of you all know how to play golf? And she said, well, you have to learn how to play golf if you want to be in the where the deals and the, you know, where everything is made. And I said, well, why can't men come to the spa with me? Why do I have to play golf? And I said that at the table with the men. Why don't you all come to the spa where the women make the deals? But this notion of exclusionary, because it's embedded that if you want to be a part of the top of the house, you got to learn how to play golf. Well, that's exclusionary. I have no interest in playing golf. This is not against anybody that plays golf. I'm just talking about me. I have no interest in that. So should that exclude me? But then also the bar for us is higher. I had a friend of mine who is also in this space say sometimes for Black women, the bar is heaven. Mm. It is so high. And we have got to take that power back because it's not right. And it's just set up there and it's superficial. And we just have to give ourselves grace. So thank you for getting the slide up. It's doubt, discounting, and fear. And what is fear? False evidence appearing real. That means it's false. And it can impact you in so many ways. And so when I finally realized what was happening to me, I had to own that. But I also had to own that this is not my fault. This is some external factors that have been at play for many, many years. And what I had to do was recognize that, but also remember who I was. Mm-hmm. Remember who I was. Remember what my mother said to me. And honestly, that has empowered me to really embrace this and not claim this imposter syndrome anymore.
Yeah. Thank you for that very eloquent explanation and also very relatable. I think we can all relate to how you described imposter syndrome and how it shows up. And the fact that it's a lot, there are a lot of factors outside of ourselves that lead to imposter syndrome. And I know we're talking about how it shows up differently for Black women, and you touched on that. But Black women are not the only people who have imposter syndrome. You know, men have it a lot less. I think I hear it showing up in women a lot more, but white women have it as well. So if it's not real, then how does it, you know, how do you think this whole term came about and how is it different for us as Black women?
And it's interesting. So I'm no way the subject matter expert on this, but I have a fundamental belief that there are systems at play to put the victim in place of the system and make it our fault. And by doing so, it actually makes us collaborators and corroborating this system that has been put in place to make sure we don't reach our full potential. And so it's not that I'm saying it's not real because I experienced it, but I am saying it's almost like looking at something from the outside looking in. And being able to say, that's not real. So I need to speak truth to what is real and what I know to be factual. And I know what Felicia Robinson is capable of doing and owning that and not letting these external factors reshape who I am in my own mind. And it is real for so many groups. It's not just Black women. But the reason I lean to Black women is because we just carry so much, so much for so many. And the burden of that alone and trying to be perfect in all of those hats that we wear, it's not imposter, it's just impossible because it's so much. Maybe it's the impossible syndrome. Right. Because we try to be so much to so many. And I'm saying, notice what it is. You can ask yourselves these questions. Are you doubting yourself? Are you discounting your own accomplishments? Are you even discounting your own God-given potential? Have you tapped into that, right? So it has to be a series of things that you know to be true to counter those things that are actually false evidence.
Absolutely. I like that. So that might be the new term that we have to adopt, the impossible syndrome, not the imposter syndrome. So I think that, you know, this conversation is really timely because we just got a devastating Supreme Court decision, which ruled against affirmative action. And as I was kind of, you know, responding to different people in different communities that I'm affiliated with, one on social media, I saw a post that Michelle Obama made, and it was her kind of take on it. But what struck me was the response of hatred and vitriol. And there was somebody who's very popular, has a lot of followers, conservative, who said that her thesis at Princeton was basically at the level of a fifth grader and was insinuating that she was not intelligent. And so when the intelligent and the articulate amongst us are being painted as undeserving, it's no surprise why the rest of us would be feeling like imposters. So I'm wondering if this is one of those outside factors that you refer to, and just what's your response overall to the Supreme Court decision on affirmative action?
Well, Dr. Stephanie, we might need a whole podcast just on that. But, you know, I'll answer it this way. When I was in college, I was the only African-American majoring in mathematics at that time. And I remember, I can't remember the context of why my professor said this to me, but there was an ability to be inducted into Phi Beta Kappa. And at that time, this is not a slight against my alma mater, but at that time, only one African-American would be inducted and the rest would not be African-American. Mm-hmm. And I think the context was I was may have been talking to her about that experience, which hurt me deeply because I had the highest GPA at that time. So I just knew I was going to be inducted. But what she said to me was, Felicia, you need to accept that you're only good. You're not great. Whoa. And you will never be great. So be satisfied that you're just good. And I'm paraphrasing because that was a long time ago, but that has stuck with me that my professor, now she in her mind thought she was actually helping me, right? Mm-hmm. Helping me to deal with this loss. But it actually probably was the first time that imposter syndrome started to sink in. Here's someone that I fully respected. And I don't think she thought mean intentions. I honestly think she thought she was helping me to basically settle that I would never be great. So while this is most disheartening, I'm sure we would all say it's not a surprise because our best and brightest have always been smeared and discounted and demeaned. It's actually been happening, Dr. Stephanie, for over 400 years. And I, just like so many in America, I don't even have the words. It's not even disappointment by the recent court ruling. It's actually more of a disgust. This judicious body just summarily dismissed the fact that our community, for our community, there's been a 400-year head start. Mm-hmm. They just summarily dismissed that. And my mathematical mind says, well, since there was a 400-year head start, I think affirmative action programs should be in place at least another 400 years,
yeah.
Equal opportunity under the law. And one of my mentors shared this with me too, that I think the courts just have summarily dismissed. Talent is universal. It is in all of us, but access is not.
Mm-hmm.
Until there is equity in access, affirmative actions and any programs that help underrepresented groups to catch up with 400 years of a head start, they're still needed and they're still relevant. So whoever that was that said that about my idol, Michelle Obama, I would just ignore that as ignorance. Ignore that as ignorance. And it's that same thing, instilling fear, false evidence appearing real. So they say these things because they're playing on other people's fear of Black excellence. So they feel like they can say that and that'll take everything down a notch. But for me, what the Supreme Court has done for me, I'm not saying anyone else, but it actually has emboldened me, because now I'm going to really be my most authentic, fabulous self, because you have taken away some of the programs that would have been able to help generations to come. So I'm encouraging all of us to lean into what we bring to the table. It reminds me of the poem by Maya Angelou, "And Still I Rise." That poem gets me through a lot. So that's what I'm saying to the Supreme Court. I have to be really on my best behavior. But what I'm saying to the Supreme Court, I've been emboldened now to really be my authentic and fabulous self.
I love that response. We as a people have always risen through all types of different challenges. So I know that we will rise and persevere and prevail through this one. But I love the mindset or the framing that this gives me permission to be even bolder, because we do, in order to be able to advocate for all of the boys and girls at the Boys and Girls Club and our own children, our nieces and nephews, our community, we cannot afford to just be playing it safe. We cannot afford to hide our light behind a bush. If there was any time to say, here I am, and to use the gifts that God has given us, the time is now, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the chips have been laid out on the table. We know what we're dealing with, and the time is now.
Absolutely.
So Melody says that we will need to coach our college-bound students to include their racial experiences in their application essays. The court ruling will not allow discounting that information. And thank you for sharing that point. I've heard some other people say that as well, that they can put it in their essays. And then I've heard the flip side of that, that, you know, now we're putting the burden on our students to put that in their essays. What, you know, what if there was something else that they really wanted to write about? So now it's always placing the burden on us, which I think even goes into imposter syndrome, because we feel like we have the burden to prove our worth. The burden is always on us. But I know that our students will do what they need to do and are going to shine brightly through that. And thank you for sharing.
And not to plug HBCUs, but I'm going to plug HBCUs. So we have options, and we have to take a step back and assess the terrain. We have options.
Yeah. Absolutely. I have two. I have a senior in high school and a junior in high school. So this is like right now for us. So we're assessing our options. We were looking at a lot of HBCUs, but we're also looking at some PWIs. So it'll really be interesting how all of this unfolds. One of the other things that I always feel about imposter syndrome is that imposter syndrome is more about how we feel than how we perform. I know that when you mentioned it, you said that it affected your performance, but it sounds like you said it started with your feelings and how you feel. And I think that there are plenty of people, plenty of us out here doing great things. I would even use Simone Biles as an example. I think at some point she even felt imposter syndrome as high as she was in the sport and as much as she had accomplished. So we can be performing at levels of excellence and still feel imposter syndrome. And so I like to say that the feelings are what's fraudulent, not us. And so if we can kind of separate those feelings from who we are, it can help us find our way back. And some of the things you've mentioned, I believe that the microaggressions, the systemic racism, all of those things. And then sometimes that will allow us to develop some limiting beliefs about ourselves. And if we can identify what those external factors are and what internal factors, like our own limiting beliefs, might be coming up, then we can get past those feelings. What are your thoughts about that?
You know, I do think being self-aware of what your limitations are. None of us are 100%, at least I don't think we are. And so it's what I've learned to do is make myself vulnerable a little bit instead of holding it inside about what my limitations are. So, for example, I express with my current team and CEO, if you want a PowerPoint presentation that's more than 10 slides, don't come to me. That's my limitation, Dr. Stephanie. So what do? I surround myself with people who are very good at PowerPoint, right? Mm-hmm. But I put it out there because I'm okay being self-aware with what I can do, what I do best, and what I don't do best. And once I put it out there, people started chiming in what they're not good at. Well, the point is playing on each other's strengths, right? You don't have to be perfect at everything. So I'm learning to make myself just more vulnerable mm-hmm. with the folks who are around me, not in a way that discounts, but a way that makes me human. And that invites them to also be human. But I do agree with you. These feelings are indeed the fraud. That's what we've been saying. That is the fraud. That is how feelings turn into fear. And for me, for a short period of time, that started to impact how I was performing. Mm-hmm. Now, my bar is so high for myself, it was probably even in my own head that the performance was not where it needed to be. And it probably was still stellar. But I'd like to share a quote by James Baldwin, too, because these limiting beliefs, and I don't know if I've conveyed this as strongly as I would, but I want to share this quote by James Baldwin. And it says, if the world does it to you long enough and effectively enough, then you start to do it to yourself. And you become a collaborator and an accomplice in your own demise. So what I've come to realize is that I'm not going to buy into that I'm the imposter. The whole system that is sometimes rigged, not sometimes, is rigged against marginalized people. That is the imposter. And to pursue our dreams and aspirations, that is a God-given right. That is a God-given right. And so when you have these twisted ways that the world is going into, I have to always go to my faith and my belief in what I was put on this world to become and to achieve. And frankly, I believe that we all need to be in tune with that spirit inside of us, because that can shut down some of this noise. And it is fraudulent. And depending on where you are spiritually, I will say this. We have a phrase in the Black church that we say the devil meant it for bad, yeah. Right? But if you're in tune with that spirit that is inside of you, it can actually turn for your good. And that's what I try to do constantly. I do daily affirmations, because that has to pour into me to remind me of just how beautifully God made me. But you can pick things too that you have to constantly pour into you so that you tap into that inner joy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that all of those things that you're pouring into yourself help to combat those external forces that have been set up on purpose to make you feel like an imposter. It's not by accident. It's not by mistake. It is by design.
And to have you included in it. It's a mastermind strategy to have you included in your own discounting and doubt and fear. And so we have to reject that. We have to reject that. And we have to take a partner. If you're feeling that way, like I was holding it in to myself, I would talk about it with my husband, but I was holding it in. And I'm inviting any woman who is feeling that to just reach out to someone you know loves you unconditionally and share that. And I promise you, your village will also remind you just how fabulous you are.
Absolutely. Have a village of people who can remind you. And I think that's why sisterhood is so important. This podcast is Sisters Overcoming and Thriving. I think that we have to support each other and encourage each other and remind each other how fabulous we are, because there are way too many forces out in play to remind us or try to convince us of the opposite. And what you were saying about the James Baldwin quote and how it's intended for us to become collaborators in our own demise, it reminds me of something that I went to Duke with Dr. Tama Bryant, who's now the president of the American Psychological Association and also a minister. And she was preaching and she posted a video that talks about how the same people who oppressed and enslaved us also told us that we were lazy. If we weren't working for them and being a slave, that we were lazy. And many of us have that fear of being lazy instilled in us to the point that we're just constantly busy and we're just constantly hustling and just constantly. So realizing that, you know, is a limiting belief that came from the outside, and rejecting that and replacing it with a healthy, balanced belief that, yeah, I deserve to rest and I deserve a break just like everybody else. I'm not lazy if I take a break or if I rest or if I share the load. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Another thing that came up that I thought was really interesting, I do some executive coaching with this company called Better Up. And they shared a post on LinkedIn about how Black people in corporate America report at a higher level than other groups the inability to feel authentic at work and to feel like they can be their authentic selves at work. And I've seen statistics like this before, and I definitely have experienced it before, so it wasn't surprising to me. But there were so many people commenting that, well, I don't believe in those that study. I think that was falsely done, or the equivalency. Well, I think that happens with white women too. And it just reminded me of the fact that sometimes it feels like everyone else feels like they can tell us what our experience is. If it seems like people just feel emboldened to be able to tell us what's real and what's not real, which is why the topic of this is you're not crazy. Because when people do that to you enough, you start to feel like you're crazy. How are you going to tell me what my experience is with being authentic at work? So I just wanted to hear your thoughts about the invalidation and how people always try to sort of say, no, that's not real, because you work in the diversity and equity space.
You know, it's so interesting, because in that space, a lot of organizations are putting in their, I would say, strategies or their declaration around that they foster a culture of inclusion where you can come and be your authentic and best selves. Those are very, very big, high level words. And so for me, I think it's a matter of understanding what part. I personally feel like we have multifaceted parts to us. Mm-hmm. Like I feel since I was 6 years old, I've always been a boss. I'm not saying it to just, you know, tout myself, but I remember telling my mom what I was not going to do and what I was going to do at 6 years old. So I feel you come into this world with certain wiring. You have to be careful because what you then are getting exposed to, who you actually protect with your narrative, it can reshape and retool and get you all bent out of shape to what you're supposed to be. But we wear different hats, and in those different hats, there are different roles. So when we say bring your authentic self to work, you really have to take a step back and answer that for yourself. The organization can't answer that for you. Do you feel like you have psychological safety? That's why I turn it. Whatever and however you're showing up, and I always tell the people on my team, now, you have to be doing your job. You can't be trying to do your authentic self if you're not really doing the expectations of the job. But let's say you're doing that and you don't feel like you are seen, that you're heard, that you're valued. The way I'm wired is I feel like you have to bring that up either with your manager or with HR about what it is you're feeling. There's another quote by Zora Neale Hurston that says, if you're silent in your pain, they will kill you and swear you enjoyed it. So we can't keep it to ourselves. And I agree with you. No one can tell you what your perspective is, but you. No one can tell you how certain things are making you feel, but you. But I'm encouraging us to have the courage to speak out. And one of the ways I do it, I can even start a conversation to say, you know what? I have something I have to say, and I can tell you it may not come out right. I promise you, it may not come out right. But do you mind if I just have to express what just happened now? And typically people are going to say yes. And I said, I'm doing it as respectfully as I can. So I will ask for permission. Some people may say, you're asking for permission? Yes, because I want that person to be open to hear what I just experienced. So I'm asking, hey, something just happened here. Can we pause and not just pretend that that didn't just happen? Can we talk through that? And I've actually had some very powerful insights where people might say, I didn't realize, or I didn't know. And so I say, well, let's talk about that. Let's get other examples about that. So I'm encouraging us, if you're feeling it, it's something that you can have the courage to talk about. As to how did that microaggression that just happened, how did that make you feel? And with hope, if you're around decent human beings, they're going to pause long enough to hear your feelings and your story about what that is. Now, showing up and being our authentic selves, that's a complicated thing if you're in corporate America. Mm-hmm. And this is where multi-generational approaches to these things. I happen to be, you know, I love fashion. So if I'm in work, this is probably going to be the look. I'm probably not going to go to work in flip-flops. Should I be offended if someone comes to work in flip-flops? Not if the culture is that way. No, I shouldn't. If the culture says that's fine, but if the culture and the policies say that we have a professional dress for this event, right? Most cultures have gone, you know, business casual and you can kind of come as you are. But it's also being able to meet the organization there if it's an event where you're not supposed to wear flip-flops.
Right.
And don't come in flip-flops and then complain that you weren't able to be your authentic self. So I think it's really a, what is your authentic self? You're multifaceted. you're multifaceted. So what part of you is that authentic self do you want to present depending on that scenario?
Mm-hmm.
I hope that makes sense, Stephanie. It's more of a, no one can tell you how you're feeling, but you have to also be honest with how you're feeling. And in the moment, take the time to make sure whoever that other person is, that they also understand what just happened and how that made you feel.
Yeah, absolutely. That, I think that's a great point. And I think that's great advice, which kind of leads into my next question, which is, what advice do you have for Black women who are suffering with imposter syndrome, or who maybe they didn't know they were suffering with imposter syndrome, but through this conversation and your description, they're like, yeah, that kind of sounds about like how I feel.
Awesome. Well, the one quote, I have so many favorite quotes, but this one has been near and dear to me for, oh my gosh, probably 30 years. And this is actually not just for Black women, but for anyone. And I just want to read it out loud because I think the power of the words and hearing them is just so impactful. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give others permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, there's that word again, mm-hmm. our presence automatically liberates others. So what can we do? Let your light shine. Let it shine so brightly that it blinds the people in the room. And you walk into that light. And I believe that there is light in all of us, in every single one of us. But that light has been dimmed by external factors telling us we're not good enough, telling us we're not worthy, telling us that affirmative action is bad, telling us that we need to work harder. And all of that are these external factors that disconnects you from your original purpose and potential that is your human birthright. So what can we do? I'm telling you, let your light shine. When I walk in the room, people see my light. I don't even have to say anything, Dr. Stephanie, and you too. I've been around you. That light is just following you because you have inner joy and inner peace. So that's what we can do to combat this impossible syndrome. That's what you named it, the impossible syndrome.
Now, one other thing I think that comes up with impossible syndrome and imposter syndrome is that I think sometimes after a failure or a setback, that's when it might start to set in. You've been letting your light shine, and then you have a failure, a disappointment, or a setback. I know we definitely go into your mentors, go into those positive people you have, going back to your affirmations. But any other advice to kind of get back into that space where you can feel like you're full of light and you're shining after a failure or a setback?
Absolutely. I personally feel like, and I have made mistakes, and I try to own them. Mm-hmm. And first of all, admit them, not try to hide from them. But the mistake doesn't define or redefine who you are.
Yeah.
But what we're sometimes so afraid of making those mistakes, but making mistakes actually makes it possible. Thank you, Melody. It's the possible syndrome. Making those mistakes makes it possible for you to get better and stronger, because if you take the time to learn from those mistakes and own it and admit it, you actually come out on the other end even stronger than you were prior to the mistake. And so don't let the mistake say this is you. It's not. You made a mistake. You take a step back. You admit it. And you ask yourself, what should I learn? What can I learn from that mistake? And how can I even share the learnings with others who might be, you know, at risk of making a similar mistake? How can I share my learnings proactively? And what I find is when I am in that space, if I can get back into pouring into someone else, giving of myself, not being so focused on me, myself, and I, somehow it starts to remedy and it starts to feel better. And you might even find somebody who said, girl, I made that same mistake, right? And you're like, what? And you sharing the learnings. The growth comes from the mistakes. Now, sometimes we don't learn from the mistakes. That can also be an outcome from this. And that's okay if you make the same mistake twice, but try to learn and take a step back. And sometimes we don't own that and we run the risk of repeating that mistake. So when you make them, don't let it say to you that you're less than. It's not that you're less than. You made a mistake because you're a human being. And so I always tell people, give yourself grace. Give yourself grace and give grace to others. That is how I've dealt with mistakes.
Yeah, I think that that's a great point, because I think you hit on it when you said admit the mistake. I think sometimes when we hide the mistake, then it causes us to feel shame because it's hidden in this dark little corner. And shame is a terrible thing to have to carry around. It definitely is something that will cover up and dim that light and put you in that state of feeling that imposter syndrome. So just own up to it, you know, learn from it and move forward. I think that's a great, great advice. So as we are wrapping up, this is one of the questions that I always ask to everybody on my show. What limiting beliefs did you have to overcome in order to get to where you are today?
That I had to be perfect, that I put undue pressure on myself. And when I finally accepted that, that was self-inflicted, honestly, that was self-inflicted. But what it does is it fuels this notion of this syndrome that we've been talking about. Because you start to, and I don't know about other people, but someone shared this, we have gremlins in our minds and they're there waiting to just pounce on any negativity about yourself and fuel it and reinforce it. And so my limiting belief was that I had to be perfect and I had to accept that, no, I don't have to be perfect. And I will admit, you know, in fact, a few weeks ago, I had to admit that a mistake happened on my team. I didn't throw my team under the bus. I took responsibility. But I said to my CEO, I said, hey, I need to let you know what has happened here. And here's how I think we can remedy it going forward. And Stephanie, do you know what he said?
What did he say?
He said, okay. And then he started talking about something else. He said, okay. And then he went on to another subject. And I was literally making myself feel so bad. And I didn't want to throw my team under the bus, right? So I took ownership. But he literally said, okay, and started talking about something else.
And just like that, awesome. So I would just love to ask, how can people be connected with you, share your social media, or if you have a website, or how they can get involved with the Boys and Girls Club, or anything that you want to share?
Thank you. So you can find me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn tells my career story much better than I do. But thank you for mentioning the Boys and Girls Club of America. I am a club kid. And so in the summers, that's where my parents sent me and my siblings. So you can also reach me at Boys and Girls Club. And that email address is frobinson@bgca.org. F as in Felicia Robinson at bgca.org. I'm working on building out my own brand and what I stand for, because I do feel like I have something unique to offer. So stay tuned on a website coming, but please reach out to me and through LinkedIn or send me an email. Let me know your thoughts. If you have a totally different perspective on this, I'm so open to hearing. And that's another thing, is be open to hearing others' perspectives, because someone may have felt differently than what the expressions that I was sharing. And that's okay. That is what diversity of thought is about. But as women, and especially as Black women, can I please, please, please beseech each of us, love each other, support each other. You go, girl, to each other. It does not rob you of your light to shine the light on someone else. Mm-hmm. And I promise you, if you do that, both of you will be blessed. So as women, Black women, we have to support each other and be each other's fan club. And you do not lose any ounce of your light by doing that.
Absolutely. Well, I am a fan. I'm a big fan of you, Felicia, and all of the women who joined us. Thank you so much for joining. I know it's a holiday weekend, so you could be on the road traveling. So I appreciate you taking the time out. And thank you, Felicia, for you taking the time out to be here with me and my audience. And like she said, stay tuned. So we'll stay tuned and keep looking out for all of the wonderful things that you're doing.
Thank you, Dr. Stephanie. This was truly an honor, and wish everyone a wonderful weekend. And thank you for joining us.
All right. Good night.
Sisters, come together now. Come together now. It's time to help each other out. Help each other out.
Welcome to the SOAR Podcast. This is a platform for sisters to gather and have some empowering conversations. And in the process of these conversations, we help each other overcome some limiting beliefs. I want you to join the conversation. I appreciate your likes, subscribes, and comments. This podcast is sponsored by Stephanie Brown Coaching. If you have any limiting beliefs that are holding you back, feel free to contact the coach at sociotap.com/StephBrownMD.